So please help me to welcome back to the stage the director of horses, Liz Merman. Yeah. So this movie stressed me out so much watching it. I can't even tell you. I was like, if a horse dies in this film, Liz, I will never forgive you. But thankfully, no horses were hurt in the making of this film or in the execution of this film. But maybe can we talk a bit about the risk, I guess, because you make it so, it's so stressful for me as an audience member, and I'm sure I heard some sighing and some gasping too. But was it a risk for you to make it, to personify these animals so much and to get right up in their faces and to take their perspective? I mean, it could have been, it was risky because it, I guess it could have been sort of cheesy or something, but, or did you get feedback that maybe you shouldn't take this approach? Maybe you could just talk a bit about that.
The first thing, I want to say very quickly before anyone leaves, that the closing credit music was Rock Claws Essential, who are a local band, and I think we have Donald here in the audience, maybe, unless he left during credit. Yes. He's very kind of recently. My editor played this for me early on in the edit, and we were both like, oh my god, this is brilliant. And we wasted hours just putting it down with different images and playing with it. Anyway, speaking of cute and dangerous, but thank you very much, and thank you for coming. It was, the agenda with this film from the beginning was to try to make something that was really about the horses and about their characters that didn't get Disney-ish or cute or whatever, and it's a very, or sentimental, or, you know, and it wasn't, it's Ireland, Ireland's overly romanticized, horses are overly romanticized, there were so many places where it could have sort of fallen into cheesy, you know, green pasture territory. And I think that's part of why I was so drawn to Paul and the racing world, because he's so not cheesy and cute, you know, and it's such a tough masculine world. And that's the reality of it. I mean, the stakes are really high for everybody in the racing world, for the trainers and the jockeys, and, you know, who also die, and the horses, and, you know, it is not an easy life. And so I wanted to do something where you both got the sort of fun and passion of it and the character, and also a real sense of, yeah, I mean, you know, they're athletes, as he says at the beginning, and it's like with any professional athletes, it's not an easy life.
And maybe talk about a bit about, was there any sort of sense of danger getting that close to them as well? Like, for your crew, they kick, they're big animals, especially John Call. Oh my God, terrifying.
All right, well, now that we're done with the film and our insurance policies. I got drawn into this because I grew up riding horses in upstate New York and central New York State. And so I'm very comfortable around them and have a fairly intuitive sense of what's safe and what isn't. And our crew, one of the things that Ashley, my producer in the back there, and I sort of, you know, when we were interviewing people, we made a point of getting people who had at least done some work around horses, which in Ireland isn't that hard, it turns out. And so there was a certain amount of kind of, on top of directing and, you know, looking in the monitor and doing all the other things one does as a director, I also had a little bit of a sort of babysitting, shepherding, making sure that the crew wasn't walking up behind them in the wrong place. If you're sensitive, one of the things that I found really interesting was the process of watching the horses get used to the crew. Because the first time they see all this gear and they see us in their faces, except for Ardalan, who just didn't care, it was curious. You know, Ardalan's just like, ooh, what's that? Can I eat it? I mean, to everything, basically. But the rest of them were sort of, you know, John Cole was a little bit alarmed, and then he was like, I don't really care, I ignored it. And Cuna Gras obviously took a lot of work before he would relax enough to let us go into the stall, film with him the way, I mean, the other ones we had a much easier time with. So in a sense, part of the character development was watching them get used to us and get used to us being around. And the races were a bit trying. I think Ashling probably had a few near heart attacks, worrying that we were going to, you know, trip someone up with a cable on the parade ring or something. I mean, there were definitely moments that things could have gone terribly wrong, but I think we used a bit of stable sense and stayed out of the way.
And maybe can you talk a bit about the selection of those three horses? Were you spoiled for choice, or did you just go for the three most likely to win?
I mean, I kind of, I asked Paul for sort of, you know, kind of consulted with Paul and James of who he was. They were, when we started filming with them, they'd been having a pretty bad year. You know, were this a different kind of film, there would have been a whole thing about how desperately they needed winners kind of built into the beginning, but that would have made a different kind of film. But they did, that was sort of the premise I was going with, well, who are you really hanging your hopes on? And also, you know, there's some summer and winter horses, and so we need to sort of get a mix of those because we're falling a year. So I had a list of like 12, really, who kind of Paul and James were excited about. And so we started, we actually filmed with 6 horses over the course of the year, and sort of one of them, we had a brilliant first race and was a great character and all this exciting stuff, and then he got injured right away, and we kept filming him for the rest of the year, but it just didn't. And our first rough cut, which was 2.5 hours long, had 5 horses in there, and it was a slow process of sort of weaning them down, but it was a combination of who's out there and who's racing consistently, but also I really did feel like these three had, I mean, one of the horses we followed pretty consistently just didn't really do it for me. He just wasn't that interesting. And we had some nice races with him, but I don't know, he and I just didn't connect. And so he just wasn't reading him as a character in the way that these three, to me, really had distinct characters. There was one other horse that I was really in love with as a character who only raced once the whole time. And again, I kind of tried to keep him in, and it didn't quite work. So it was a combination of personality and the way they acted with us and what they actually ended up doing. But as with every film I make with people, you overcast and then you cut down. At least I do. Better, more disciplined filmmakers might not, but I overcast and then cut down. The one thing we probably should have thought of, I realized, late into it, so it would have been nice if one of them was gray instead of two bays and a black horse, and would have made for less confusion in the audience. But
no.
that occurred to me too late.
No.
We will never forget. No. They are so different. Kunagrai, like, I'm sorry, that horse is distinct. Yes, there's a question in the back.
I was just wondering, what
was your favorite horse if you had to pick? They can't hear you, don't worry.
It's very funny, I was asked that at another film festival by a mother on behalf of her son, and my first thought was, I'm not answering that question. I was like, well, it's a little boy asking, I can't say no. But, I mean, yeah, I do feel completely irrationally, I feel sort of guilty answering this question. But I personally, I liked Kindergarten. I think I liked the challenge of, because it really was work getting to a point where we could film comfortably with that horse. And I really felt like the scene in Ascot when he finally sort of reaches out to the camera and he relaxes and we can get closer to him, it was this tremendous sense of achievement. It was like, all right, we put in this time, we've got to know this horse, and now we're sort of his friends, and that took real work, and I don't know, it was bizarrely, it was an interesting, and weirdly, here's a little confession, since there's so few people in the audience that can say this, during the edit, I found myself dreaming about horses all the time, and you know, you sort of dream edit loops and trims and all these tedious things, but I kept having almost horrible dreams that Kindergarten was getting injured, and I would have to carry him physically off the track, and somehow he really got under my skin in a sort of scary way, because he kept hurting himself in my dreams for months. Fortunately, now the film's done, it's over.
He's a self-harmer. You shouldn't have been worried. I was worried. Yes?
It seemed like sound was a really major component, and just to pick out one aspect of that, you sort of had music / sound effects for a atmosphere when you were looking at a horse, and I just wanted to hear a little bit, Liz, about the creative process that brought you to that conclusion to deal with it that way. Very unique.
Yeah, maybe you can talk a bit about the creative process around the sound design.
I mean, one of the things that really struck me, music was always an interesting challenge that I started thinking about very, very early, but kind of worked out and experimented with in the edit room. But I mean, the stable is a very loud place, you know. I mean, and there are tractor engines, and there's the generator and the walker, and there's hoses and shouting, and you know, there's nothing pastoral about the sound environment. And I didn't want the film, obviously, to feel pastoral and romanticized. So I always knew that I wanted the soundscape to be very, you know, hectic, because so much of their time is hectic and constructed and not sort of, you know, not some sort of artificial, pretty, peaceful thing. So I started thinking very early on about sort of industrial constructed sounds that would go against everything you expected from sort of, you know, acoustic, blah, 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 pleasant, sort of nice things. And And then the idea of, we just started collecting, you know, our sound recordist just went out and sort of picked up all sorts of sounds around the stable, and, you know, latches closing, and, you know, the obvious ones like clomping on the street, but also, you know, chomping on food, and, you know, hay being thrown, and just every sort of sound we could imagine. And we kind of collected those and threw them at my wonderful composer and said, turn yourself into an experimental electronica. You know, it's not the kind of thing he'd done before. But I wanted to create something that sort of enhanced all the sounds that were already there. So that was sort of one element of the music, is that kind of rhythmic use of natural sound that sort of, it was really sparked off by James. James has a comment at one point where he says, horses are creatures of habit, they don't like upsetting the routine. And in a certain way, that music comes in at a moment where it's like, all right, they're in the routine, this is what's going on in the stable, and it fills in the space a bit for us, but it also kind of gets into that. I always feel when I watch them sort of going through the motions that there's a, and I know from riding horses, that there's a rhythm in your head. And Paul, for instance, sings all the time on horses. We couldn't use it because we couldn't afford any of the licensing. It's mostly ABBA and Elvis. But, you know, there's something about being on horseback that makes you sort of hum and sing. And there's the idea that there was a rhythm going internally was something that felt right to me. And then the more sort of disturbing electronica stuff was a bit, I mean, it sounds slightly pretentious perhaps, but I guess there was something about kind of trying to get into the idea of the kind of agitated or meditative sounds that I was imagining. It's the most editorial part of the whole film, the music, really. I mean, it always kind of is, but I wanted to get something that felt to me like it was echoing what I was projecting into what might be going on to their heads. And so each of them had a different kind of sound and a different kind of feel and a different kind of mood that somehow played on this idea of sort of noise and internal buzz rather than as distinct from the soundscape that was created around them, and it was the sort of rhythmic, ordinary stuff. I don't know, you know, that was just trial and error and playing with it. But and we did a lot of, there's no foleying, no artificial sound, but we did do a lot of layering in of sound that we recorded around.
Well, I think it was very successful in creating, enhancing the differences in personality as well. I don't know if you agree with me or not. There's a question. What inspired the dream sequence?
The famous dream sequence. It's interesting. The dream sequence was a rather controversial moment in the film, which was cut out in the BBC version and the RTE version, but remains in the Irish Film Board version. I think that there was partly it was sort of at that point in the film, I felt that we could take a little bit of license and be playful with it, especially with Ardalan, who's a sort of playful horse. And we hadn't seen any of the typical kind of bright green, idyllic, full, frolicking and sun stuff. And there was, you know, I mean, I spent a lot of time when my crew and I were standing there, or I was standing there, or whatever, you know, staring at the horses and just filming them doing nothing, basically, speculating as to what is going on in their heads. And so I think at a certain point, I hoped that by not having done things that were too intrusive, there are moments where there's sort of internal sound and, you know, images sort of flashing through while they're sitting around doing nothing, and that was sort of pushing the boundaries a bit more and getting into a sort of fantasy about, well, you know, what goes on when they're just dozing off. And I'm curious, because a lot of people don't, did anyone have no idea there was a dream sequence and have no idea what we're talking about, or did everyone get that it was? Yeah, it's an interesting, I remember our first rough cut screening, we turned around and said, so what do you think of the dream sequence? And various executives in the room said, dream what? But some people instantly, it's when Ardalan sort of, before Fairy House, he's sort of nodding off to sleep, and then there's a sun through a trees and sort of flickers, and then there's a full frolicking, and then he sort of jolts up, and then it goes into the bad dream. The good dream is the full frolicking memory of childhood, and then the bad dream is the racehorse and the noise and the yelling and the helicopters and sort of flashback from Galway. And then I say, morning, Artie, and he looks at me and kind of glares and turns around and goes back into his stall. But I don't know, partly it was just I kind of wanted to see if we could get away with it, and did it and enjoyed it and felt like it. I mean, the thing about this film was, and also the sort of very long sequence where the two horses are rolling in the paddock. It's kind of a well, you could never do that right at the beginning, at least not with television commissioners on board, but maybe you can get away with these kind of more lyrical, strange moments at the end because you're sort of on a ride where you're wondering what's going on in their heads. But it is a controversial moment. And if you didn't like it anyway, I've heard it and understand. It's sort of visual pleasure and playfulness, which you rarely get to do in a documentary in this way, so I just kind of couldn't resist. For me, it says Ardalan.
Artistic license with subjects that do not speak human language. We have time for one more question. Where is it? It's out there. No? Then I'll do it. Oh. So how did you connect with the stable in the first place in Paul?
I mean, the initial kind of mandate that I got when I was set out to make this film was just Horses Ireland, find a good story. And so I sort of traveled all over the country and met all sorts of different horses and horse people and went to stud farms and show jumping stables and, you know, fancy old, you know, castles where they rent out horses to holiday people and met a number of different trainers and you know, did a sort of extended kind of casting subject fishing expedition. And the Horse Racing Ireland people were really keen on the idea that we should do horse racing because, of course, they became sort of competitive with one another. So, you know, the show jumping people wanted us to do that, and the horse racing people wanted that. And there was a wonderful woman from the PR department there who sort of set up a lot of meetings with me. And I met a few other trainers who were wonderful, and as someone who can talk about horses, I could talk to them at great length and found their stables really interesting. And some of them were a little more successful, and some of them had been in the business for generations. But Paul was the very last person I met. Literally, it was the last day I was there doing research. And I met him at a sale, and he was sort of exactly what you see here. He was kind of nervous, and he was cursing a lot. He was with, actually, Ardalan's owners buying another horse for them. And so I met them, and I thought they were really amusing, and I liked the way that Paul dealt with them, and I liked the way Paul would sort of turn to me and say, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. You know, kind of like his admissions about all the things he didn't know made it so clear that he was going to be a really sort of modest, open, honest, entertaining guy. I just really clicked with him. I think it was really lucky that I found him, because up until I met him, I had no idea how this film was going to work, and I had the concept of the horse character thing, but I didn't feel like I found the right place, and it was a pretty instant thing. And I went back and spent a week with him in the stable just on my own and helping out and just sort of working with them and being there. And it just felt right. It was really obvious.
Well, thank you so much, Liz, and thank you so much for being here, everyone. Please remember to vote, and I'm sure if you have any shy questions, Liz will be available outside of the theater to address any of those. Have a fantastic evening, and thank you so much, Liz, for the film.